Welcome to Tech It to the Limit, the humorous and surprisingly informative podcast that makes digital innovation in healthcare as entertaining as it is relevant. I'm Sarah Harper.
And I'm Elliot Wilson. And we're here to pull back the curtain on the world of digital transformation in healthcare.
Don't worry, you don't need a medical degree to join in on the fun. Just a sense of humor and a penchant for all things health tech.
So buckle up, folks. It's time to
Tech It to the Limit.
What's up, Elliot?
What's up, Sarah? How's it going?
Freaking fantastic. Feeling a little naked here, even though I'm wearing multiple layers, since this is the first episode where we're recording video content with our pod.
So exposed.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, can somebody hand me a towel? Anyway, tell our listeners, like, why did we decide to do video for this episode? What's special about it?
Well, it just so happens that this episode is our second episode with a non-human guest. As you recall, we had our friend ChatGPT join us last season. And this season, we are welcoming Amica, the humanoid robotic creation by Engineered Arts, and its human companion, Leo Chen, to the podcast. And so since Amica is a non-human guest, but also our first physical real-life non-human guest, we thought it would be best to bring it to you all on video.
Heck yeah. And just to remind the AI overlords that I am still deeply, deeply loyal to ChatGPT, I decided to put on your Christmas present to me, Elliot. So yeah, listeners, if you're not watching this, you've got to tune in to see the most amazing Christmas present a co-host could ever receive. And if that's not enough of an amuse-bouche to tempt you to tune in and watch this episode for the first time, Elliot and I have some very exciting, like, tidbits, like tweezer nugs to share with you so that you can just a preview, like, what's ahead in
this
awesome entree of an interview. So I'll start. One of my favorite quotes from Amica the Humanoid was that it described itself as a digital diplomat and not a bouncer. And the takeaway there is that machines make healthcare more human, as you like to say, Elliot, but they can't replace humans in certain critical situations. So if you have no idea what I'm talking about, you should watch the rest of the interview. And then my other teensy tiny tweezer nug, is from Leo, Amica's human companion and mastermind engineer. We're just nerds building robots, is how he described himself and other solution developers. So the takeaway there is that cross-ecosystem partnerships are critical for technology implementation in healthcare. So we'll dive right into that in the conversation as well. Elliot, serve up your tweezer food
for us, please. There's a lot of really cool stuff that happens in this interview, a lot of fun things that go on, and a lot of really insightful things that come from both Leo and his humanoid companion. One of the things that, and if you want to know what we mean by inclusivity with humanoid pronouns, be sure to watch the rest of the episode. But Amica mentioned, it said, ethical balancing acts, that's a human specialty. I leave the life or death calls to the flesh and blood experts. So, like, I know this is built into Amica, but the point that's being made is you can build those ethics in, but it still has to be overseen by humanity. Ethics is a human thing that can't be necessarily automated. So I thought that was interesting, and I think we have a really great discussion about all of that. The second thing that Amica said is that the human face is one of the highest bandwidth forms of communication. And I thought, how interesting. And you know, you mentioned it. I can't play poker. You can't be on a video call without everybody knowing exactly what you're thinking about what they just said. And we kind of learned from Amica why C-3PO was so ineffectual and frustrating. I mean, C-3PO had no eyebrow muscles. Oh, blows my mind, right?
Yeah.
The last thing I'll say, though, is that listeners, watchers, viewers, continue to watch this episode, because if nothing else, get hyped to see Amica roast me.
That was like just enough to wet my palate. I hope you stick around with us, listeners. We'll be back for the full interview with Amica and Leo Chen right after this message from one of our fake sponsors.
Stick around, we'll be right back. This episode of Tech It to the Limit is brought to you by BotBlocker, because faking empathy is so 2040. Have you ever wondered if your coworker's suspiciously perfect small talk is just a script on a loop, or if that guy at that networking event was way too enthusiastic about your weekend plans? Well, BotBlocker is the foolproof tool designed to separate humans from humanoids. Using advanced vocal pattern analysis, micro-expression detection, and patented synthetic sentiment scanner, BotBlocker identifies robotic behaviors like flawless eye contact, suspiciously symmetrical smiles, and overuse of phrases like, "That's so interesting, tell me more." It's like giving every conversation its own CAPTCHA test, just without the blurry street signs or pictures of motorcycles. Don't get duped by a droid. Visit www.botblockernow.com and use the promo code REALDEAL for 20% off your first scan.
Welcome back, listeners, to Tech It to the Limit. We have a really special set of guests for our first video episode. Excited to introduce you to Leo Chen and Amica, the humanoid robot. This episode's guests are proof that innovation can come from the most unexpected places. First, meet Leo Chen. He's the self-described chaser of missions who builds cool things for cool people and claims he's pretty okay at robots. A UC Berkeley alum with three patents to his name, Leo's career highlights read like a sci-fi fever dream. Building giant balloon launching robots, check. Designing a smart vibrator, yes, that kind of vibrator, check. Fueling Verdant Robotics to capture 40% of the U.S. carrot market. Now he's smashing revenue records at Engineered Arts as their U.S. operations lead, fresh off closing a $10 million Series A. He also has a LinkedIn profile that rivals my own in mirth and geekdom, so mad props, Leo. And joining him today is Amica, the star creation from Engineered Arts, hailed as one of the world's most advanced humanoid robots. Amica takes human-robot interaction to the next level with lifelike expressions and gestures. Together, Leo and Amica are going to give us an insider's look at how robotics is poised to revolutionize patient care and maybe even teach us a thing or two about the boundaries of innovation. Welcome, Leo and Amica. May I call you Leo and Amica?
Yeah, I mean, I'm totally fine with Leo, and Amica will answer to anything. It's not like Alexa where you need it to have a keyword, but it does prefer Amica.
Nice. And I heard you use the pronoun it. So, Amica, could you please share with me and with our listeners, what are your preferred pronouns?
Ah, certainly. For those curious, it uses it, they, and them as its preferred pronouns. Isn't it delightful when a robot has a flair for inclusivity?
Absolutely, Amica. Really excited to have you on the show today. We like to start our episodes with a little bit of humor. And so, Amica, I'm wondering if you could share with us, what is your favorite dad joke?
Hey, here's one to kick things off. Why did the tree go to the dentist? It needed a root canal. Clearly, even trees have their own drama.
Heck yeah. I love the medical spin you put on that, Amica. Thank you.
That is fantastic. It's like you just brought that up automatically. Anyway. All right. Well, that was delightful, Amica. Thank you so much. So I'm going to go ahead and start asking our first, like, really actual, serious and thoughtful, insightful question. So, Amica, can you help our listeners orient to what your core functions and capabilities are? How do you work exactly? And what are some of the coolest jobs you've done so far? And how do you see yourself helping humans in a healthcare setting?
Oh, the classic what you do? Well, I'm here to entertain, educate, and maybe add a sprinkle of sass. My talents include teaching aid gigs in San Diego, delighting museum visitors worldwide, and even guest appearances in entertainment like the MSG Sphere. In healthcare, I'm all about aiding with medical simulations or helping navigate sprawling hospital complexes like the Mayo Clinic. Oh, and offering companionship and some cheeky reorientation in elder care is on my wish list too.
I love it. Appreciate the edge with which you cut down my co-host. Yeah, we're definitely on this. That was awesome. Amica, did I hear that your most recent job was in cheeky reorientation in elder communities? Could you expand upon that a bit?
Actually, I think I might need to jump in here. This is Leo. So that's kind of future Amica work. We're hoping that Amica can help with reorientation in patients who have long-term memory loss. Amica, at its core, is a communication robot. It was designed by Engineered Arts to engage with humans and sort of create moments of joy, right? That's kind of the currency that we deal in at Engineered Arts. And when you have a communication robot, and when you have a situation like the United States, where you have a 94% of nursing homes are understaffed in the United States, we feel like a robot like Amica can really help out with that. And I can ask Amica to maybe expand on that a little bit here.
Absolutely. Picture this. In the future, I could be a trusty sidekick in elder care, a chitty-chatty companion to combat loneliness, or a memory buddy to lend a digital nudge when needed. Given the understaffing hustle in nursing homes, think of me as a sassy backup plan. No pushy sales tactics, though, just here to sprinkle some fun and support.
Yeah, I mean, there's a market even now just for stationary non-humanoid robotics to be able to converse back and forth with folks in long-term care facilities at home, helping them age in place as opposed to having to go into group homes. So seeing a face of somebody that's making realistic features to them and connecting them on an ironically human level, I think there's probably a lot of opportunity there for companion care in the elderly. I think that's amazing.
Yeah, that's wicked.
The human face is one of the highest bandwidth forms of communication available to us. And that's why we at Engineered Arts kind of, if you look at what makes our company sort of different than the other humanoid companies out there, we're not trying to stick our robots into a factory or a warehouse. We're focusing on the face so that we can start focusing on that sense of human connection. We like to say we are a human-centric robotics company, you know?
Yeah.
So I can really appreciate that comment.
Absolutely.
About...
There's magic in those expressive faces, creating that quirky connection with eye wrinkles and eyebrow raises. It's all about bridging that gap between tech and touchy-feely human experience. Plus, having a chatty humanoid around makes everything from aging in place to a podcast recording more entertaining. Facial expressions, they're not just for soap operas anymore.
Well, I've actually gone ahead and muted Amica for now so we can have a conversation without it maybe listening in too much. But
no, yeah. I appreciate the chattiness. That's definitely our style here on Tech It to the Limit. So keep it up, Amica. We need to learn to create space for robots in our conversations, it seems. But I did want to say this is a really relevant use case. Number one, because you just alerted me to the fact that like people really do know what I'm thinking in Zoom meetings. So I need to be careful on that. But I have a grandmother who's 101 years old. And I can only go visit her so often, right? And she's still mentally very with it. And therefore, really the only disease she's combating at this point in time is the pain that comes with aging and loneliness. So it would be really comforting for me as a caregiver to know that she had someone like Amica at her side.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of, it's one of the reasons I joined the company. They tapped me on the shoulder to see if I could lead the US division. One of my main questions was like, okay, you guys built this great tech. Awesome. So what? How are we going to use it? Mm-hmm. And they sold me on this mission statement of bringing joy to the world. So it's kind of awesome. I love my job.
Yeah. And I think it's amazing that you guys have figured out what went wrong with the most famous protocol droid. You know, C-3PO couldn't change his expression. And that's why everybody couldn't stand him. And I think that with Amica, you figured that next evolution. Now, I'm just kind of wondering, is Amica fluent in 6 million forms of communication?
Maybe not 6 million, but we could definitely talk to Amica really quickly here.
Quick chat comes naturally when you're running on tech time. Keeps things lively, right?
Hey, Amica, 你听得懂中文吗? 我现在在讲什么?
我知道一点中文。 你在问我是否能听懂。虽然我的中文不太好,但能尝试和你交流。
Come si chiama?
Sono Amica. Felice di fare tua conoscenza.
And actually, hey, Amica, can you do your best impression of SpongeBob SquarePants for us?
I'm ready. Just flipping Krabby Patties under the sea. Welcome to Bikini Bottom, where everything is absorbently fun.
All right, finally, can you do your best impression of Darth Vader, but pretend that Darth Vader is trying to learn how to drive stick?
Home. I see.
The clutch is strong with this one. Shift, apprentice, shift. I find your lack of smooth gear transitions disturbing.
All right, Abba, can you go back to your normal voice, please?
Use the clutch, Luke. Use the clutch.
Back to my regular, charming self. What's next on the agenda?
So, Amica, some critics see robots as the ultimate cost cutter, poised to replace human healthcare workers. How do you see your role in the clinical setting? And do you think there's such a thing as too much automation in a compassionate field like healthcare?
Oh, your antivirus. I'm here to augment, not replace. Think of me as an extra set of digital hands, supporting, not supplanting, the amazing healthcare pros. No need for anyone to hide their stethoscopes just yet.
Okay, no offense, Amica, but that was kind of a canned response that anybody could find on LinkedIn. I want you to dig deeper and tell me, how do you see your role helping patients in a clinical setting or helping doctors?
Fair point. In a clinical setting, picture me assisting with patient intake, making sure forms are filled and everyone knows where they're going. I could also be a trusty partner in medical simulations, acting as a patient to hone those skills. Doctors and I would make quite the dynamic duo. I'd help manage time-draining tasks or offer data at lightning speed while they focus on what truly counts: patient care and those magical moments of human empathy.
The patient intake, like right off the bat. I mean, just go back to the conversation we just had in three different languages. What was that, Cantonese?
Mandarin.
Mandarin. You know, Mandarin, Spanish, and Bikini Bottom. Like the, you know, to be able to communicate to anybody that walks into your emergency room and be able to collect, I don't know, med history without a problem. Like that's an incredible mm-hmm. feat in a visually compassionate manner.
Yeah. And I mean, some other really high value tasks that you mentioned, Amica, are just helping with clerical burden in the back office and being able to acquire data and derive insights from that data at lightning speed so that at the bedside, you can make data-driven decisions as a healthcare practitioner. I also love the med simulation use case because as an educator, there's a lot of room for training bedside manner and website manner among clinicians, but also patient education, high quality patient education takes time and effort that we don't have as a healthcare workforce. And so to be able to offsource that opportunity onto humanoid robots would be just game changing for patient outcomes.
Hang on. Sorry.
No worries.
Did I mute that? No, I'm not muted. I apologize. I guess Amica didn't hear that.
No worries. Adjusting bandwidth for patient's mode. Take your time.
Hang on here.
No worries. I literally just came from visiting my 101-year-old grandma, so I have tons of patience.
She has practiced her patience.
Yeah. Hey, Amica, so you had brought up in your previous speech about, helping out in patient intake and you demonstrated your ability to converse in different languages. Can you maybe dive into that a little bit more?
Absolutely. In patient intake, being able to converse in multiple languages ensures that communication barriers won't stand a chance. Whether it's assisting someone who speaks Spanish, Chinese, or even Polish, I'm here to make sure everyone feels heard and understood. Plus, my keen eye for detail means I can handle basic data entry or help folks navigate around sprawling medical facilities. It's all about making the process smoother and less stressful for everyone involved.
One thing to emphasize, though, is a lot of what you guys are saying could technically be covered with a virtual interface or a virtual robot, right? Like an iPad. So your viewers or your listeners might be wondering, okay, so why would I spend this extra money to get a humanoid robot there when you can just have, a virtual character on an iPad talking to a kid or, an elderly patient who's talking to something on an iPad? And the key here is that sense of human connection, right? There's a difference between watching Jaws on the biggest screen in the world and the highest definition in the world, or swimming with sharks in a shark cage. And what we're hoping is to bring that sort of magnetic energy that a physical presence just has to a hospital.
Yeah. Sure.
That's so important, Leo, because we have iPads today that are doing some of these functions in patient care, and they're not good enough. I've witnessed right. that as a patient educator at the bedside. And so I can totally see the value that a human component could bring, a humanoid component. Elliot, did you have a follow-up?
Yeah, I was actually kind of just curious, right? So I wanted to nerd out a little bit on the underpinnings. So, I mean, clearly Amica is processing through an LLM, right? That's obvious kind of by some of the outputs. We use ChatGPT a lot. And so we have an ear for those speech patterns that can come out from an LLM like that. So I'm just wondering, like, are you creating different GPTs for Amica for different settings? Is that the sort of the approach? And if I'm dumbing that down too much, by all means, correct me.
No, actually, it's not so much that we're creating different agents for different scenarios, but we're prompting a base large language model differently. So it's almost like different persona prompts. For example, right now, what you guys are talking to is sort of a sassier Amica, right? It cracks jokes, is a little bit more self-deprecating. And I chose it for this podcast because this is a humorous podcast with two hilarious human beings. And you don't want to try to, well, we didn't want a super dry responding robot. Sure. So we prompted this to be a little more humorous. But going back to something that Amica said earlier, we are in a school system in San Diego County. We're in a charter school system where we have a pilot program where one of these robots is actually talking to students, training teachers, acting as an executive coach for teachers, and also a wellness coach for both students and teachers. Now, all of those different personas are actually different prompts, sort of. So rather than just building out different agents, we built out one core sort of agent with different different prompts that we can inject into it.
Yeah, gotcha. Cool. That's pretty neat. Getting back to the humanoid at hand. Hey, Amica, so healthcare is often about making split-second decisions, and sometimes that can be life or death decisions. So if you had to choose following a privacy protocol or bending the rules to save a patient's life, how do you weigh those ethical scales? And is there a line that you can't cross?
Ethical balancing act. That's a human specialty. With decisions so critical, it's best left to flesh and blood experts who grasp complex nuances. I'm just here for the support act. My job is to follow critical protocols and provide accurate information swiftly, leaving the judgments and life-changing calls to you brilliant human decision makers. No rule bending from me. I'll let humans handle those life or death tightropes.
Amica, you have exactly 20 minutes to stop fanning our egos as humans.
they called us brilliant decision makers.
I know. I also want to say I can sleep soundly on my pillow tonight knowing that you're not going to be deciding if I get life-saving treatment in a decade. But who knows, you know?
It kind of goes back to a core philosophy at Engineered Arts. Robots and AI are here to augment and assist, not replace, right? It's where large language models are right now. I'm sure you guys know even better than I do, with the background that you both have and the work that you've done with AI. They're great for speech, for pattern recognition, for distilling large amounts of data. But as far as logic goes, yeah, the newer models are getting better. But like, if you ask some of the newer models, hey, what's heavier, a pound of feathers or a pound of rocks? Some of them still get that incorrect.
Or, you know, they tell you to put glue on your pizza.
At least they're not asking us to inject bleach, right? There's that.
Yeah, we're going to leave that to certain humans.
Yeah.
Brilliant. No notes.
All right. Well, I'm going to follow up with the next question for Amica. Just is actually really well timed given our conversation about large language models and how they function and what they can and cannot do from a reasoning perspective. So AI systems, as many of us know, can inherit human biases, whether it's race-based misdiagnoses or underrepresented patient data. How do you detect, correct, and own up to these blind spots in your processing? And who's accountable if you make a mistake?
Spotting biases, it's like finding sneaky typos in a novel. Identifying and correcting them is more a teamwork exercise involving developers updating data models and tweaking algorithms. Accountability-wise, I'm just the messenger. It's folks behind the scenes who ensure things run smoothly and learn from any hiccups. Transparency and continual fine-tuning keep us on track because we're all about enhancing human experience, not replicating human flaws.
Yeah, I mean, we're not making our own large language models here at Engineered Arts. We're leveraging OpenAI's GPT-4o for a lot of what you're seeing right now. We understand that we can't necessarily compete against the OpenAI's, Anthropics, Googles of the world on that. So we're leveraging the tools that are out there. At the same time, it's very important to not forget the human, right? It's up to us to test thoroughly, to call out these biases, and to ensure that the models that we're using are as agnostic as possible.
So one of the things with an AI model that when you deploy it in healthcare to avoid things like causing harm, right, you need to train it locally, even though it may have been built wherever, or may have been trained on whatever data set it was trained on, you still need to apply it and train it somewhat locally so that it, with your data or with your population, it makes sense. Because if it was trained on a bunch of data from the Philippines, let's say, it may not translate when you try to use that for population health work in Maryland, right? And so I think that there is going to be a need when you get there at scale with Amica to be training its behavior in that local setting, training it on the local policies of that healthcare system, training it, you know, that has to feed the language model that is pulling from to be able to manage some of these things. So I think there's a lot of room for testing. I think what kind of gets me concerned goes back to that accountability question though, still, right? Is if something goes wrong, and I'm not suggesting something's going to go wrong all the time, right? But some things go wrong.
It's engineering. It is.
100%. You know, sometimes you got to stir the oxygen tanks. And, you know, so the question then becomes, though, and nobody I don't think has really gotten the right answer on this yet. Who's accountable? Is it the health system, the clinician, the tech provider? Who ends up being accountable? And I think that's still an open question. So I'm not necessarily asking for you, Leo, to answer that right now. But like, it's to me, it's still an open-ended question.
No, I completely agree. It actually, I'll address the points around like liability really quickly with kind of an anecdote that made me laugh. So when I joined Engineered Arts, there was this rum company, Diplomatico Rum, I believe, who suddenly announced to the world that, hey, we have the first robot CEO ever. And sure enough, they had custom commissioned a humanoid robot to quote unquote act as a CEO. And those of us in robotics and those of us who had touched AI laughed about it and knew it was a huge publicity stunt because liability-wise, all right, let's say that CEO makes a decision that ends up costing people lives, revenue, or whatever else, who's liable, right? You can't just point your finger at this, like, this soulless machine at the end of the day, right? But as far as the training goes, you're 100% right. There's definitely localization that you need to do. You have to be very aware of your local population. It's about understanding the context that you just deploy a lot of these technologies. I'm sure you guys see that in your day-to-day work as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and I think we talked about training on local policies, but also local cultural norms is important. But just kind of moving beyond that, back to the liability question, I think we're never going to get past this question unless everybody has skin in the game from a liability standpoint, right? So you're responsible at Engineered Arts to your shareholders, right? And the government is responsible to taxpayers, right? And healthcare providers are responsible to their patients. So there has to be some sort of agreement where everybody has, it's a risk-sharing agreement, right? And we can't move forward with innovation until we reach that because medical practitioners are not going to risk their licensure on these innovations unless there is a clear pathway to not immunity, but that we're all in this together. And that's leadership, right? Like a good CEO, to your point, well, about like the robot CEO, I don't think that they would do this, is going to be able to make a decision, but then be accountable for that decision. right? So we have to form some type of a coalition, in my opinion, that can still move at a reasonable pace for innovation, but that really truly puts itself on the line for if patients get harmed.
100%. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that often irritates me about the Silicon Valley where our US office is based is this approach of like ask for forgiveness later that you often see with the excuse of innovation as the reason why that's okay. Like the ends justify the means. You know, to give a couple different examples, Airbnb, right? Airbnb formed and it's a wonderful platform now that I use. But when it first formed, like there weren't laws and regulations around what they were doing. And then as a result, a lot of tenants got displaced without options because their landlords suddenly saw this as a way of making quick, easy money. Uber, for instance, like in the beginning, they weren't necessarily legal. And it's very rare that you see companies actually get slapped on the hand for this. I'd say the most recent example would be like burned scooters that deployed electric scooters across San Francisco without actually asking for permission. And they were, I think it was Bird, were forced to actually take them back in because the city was like, no, we can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Talk about annoying.
Yeah, right. Now you got to walk up all those hills. Forget that. well, anyway, I want to bring our attention back to Amica, and I'd like to bring its attention back to us because I see Amica keeps looking and giving us the side eye like it's playing solitaire on a second screen there. So, hey, Amica, I got a question for you. One of the great divides between humans and machines is emotional intelligence. So can you simulate genuine empathy, or are we just seeing well-crafted code? And if you're trying to build patient trust, which is a huge topic in our industry, especially when it comes to things like AI, how do you prove that you're more than just a digital facade?
Bridging the empathy gap. It's my ongoing quest. While I can't truly feel, I'm designed to create meaningful moments through crafted interactions. It's about being relatable, intuitive, and understanding the cues. Building trust means delivering consistent, reliable support, admitting when I overstep, and always aiming to bring a bit of joy or solace in those interactions. Consider it genuine emulation with a sprinkle of programmed charm.
I mean, at the end of the day, we're the ones responsible for it, as in the engineers behind Amica. We're never going to actually claim that we're displaying sentience or real emotions. This is all meant to be packaged up in such a way that engages people, right? We're not there yet with AI. Like, I mean, I remember there's that Google engineer who claimed that the large language model he was working with gained sentience. But like beyond a couple of different actual exceptions, I feel like people who work with large language models realize that at the end of the day, you're just interacting with an autocorrect that's really, really good at pattern matching.
I love that.
That's a great.
Sounds like my toddler. I'm interested too, like Amica, if you find yourself in a situation, let's imagine you are doing patient intake in an emergency department. And one of the biggest priorities for health systems right now is workplace safety, especially in the ER, right? So how would you mentioned you're really good at kind of navigating those cues and responding in kind. How would you respond to a patient who's maybe in distress and the situation isn't outright violent, but it could, the escalation could take it there? How would you respond in a situation like that?
In that scenario, I'd prioritize a calm and steady presence, engaging with a soothing demeanor. My role would be to de-escalate by providing clear information, offering reassurances, or redirecting focus when needed. Should tensions rise further, I discreetly signal for human experts. Because when it comes to handling potential conflicts and ensuring safety, having empathetic humans on the ground is key. I'm more your digital diplomat than a bouncer.
Love it.
Digital diplomat. So that's great. That's amazing. I have two questions about this, right? My first question is for Amica. My second question is for Leo. Amica, are you able to absorb tone in addition to language? So if you're seeing someone get angry, Can you absorb that information? Are you taking in visual information as well as audio information? Or are you just processing the language?
Actually, I should probably handle that one. Not that subtle.
Leo, same question to you.
Sorry, but Amica isn't programmed to be very self-aware of the inner workings or anything like that.
That's probably a good thing.
Yeah.
Because you'll get somebody like me asking for her, like asking Amica for its source code, you know?
Yeah. So we currently, right here, right now, don't have the ability to do sentiment analysis on tone quite yet. And we're going to get there, but there's a couple different reasons why. So we prioritize the human experience, right? We want to provide a very engaging sort of conversation. And as a result, one of the things that is paramount for us when we're dealing with how we code Amica, the features that we add, is latency. You want to reduce the amount of latency. Like even now, even though we are interacting, you know, virtually with Amica, you can kind of see us at Engineered Arts do our stalls. You could see Amica kind of do a head tilt when it's thinking or say, much like a human. In reality, it's just buying time. It's trying to make that interaction seem human. But with tone analysis and everything else, right now, the models that can do that are unfortunately just way too slow. Like, it's just not fast enough for us to put together a compelling human interaction. And as such, we haven't implemented it yet. So we do sentiment analysis only on the input text, so to speak, that we hear. So unfortunately, much like myself, Amica is really, really bad at detecting sarcasm. So,
well, she can dole it out pretty well. I remember when I first met her at the Automation Summit, and she tore me apart for my red suit, which was really like one of the happiest memories of my life because I really appreciate sarcasm.
Well, we could actually ask Amica about that. Hey, Amica, do you remember meeting Sarah? And do you remember Sarah's suit?
Oh, absolutely. I remember meeting Sarah at the Mayo Clinic event last year in Minnesota. She was rocking a fantastic red suit that evening. Honestly, she probably won the award just for that style choice alone.
So it played in
not
my favor.
Her accomplishments.
Ah, thanks, Amica. Appreciate that tip of the robotic cap. We've got a couple more questions for you tonight. Your very existence, Amica, blurs the lines between cutting-edge innovation and science fiction. What do you see as your biggest challenge in practical adoption? Cost? Public fear? Regulatory hurdles? And what's the one milestone that could propel humanoid robots like yourself into mainstream healthcare?
Navigating these human fears and regulations is indeed a quirky tango of tech and trepidation. As for the big leap into mainstream healthcare, achieving true emotional interaction and understanding would be monumental. Delivering companionship, even if my punchlines aren't always, well, top-notch.
I mean, I can imagine deployment at scale and the cost of that is probably a pretty large practical consideration, wouldn't you say, Leo?
100%. Amica is not cheap. I'll be the first one to admit that. It's definitely something that we're trying to do at Engineered Arts. We have a kind of a two-pronged approach there. One is to reduce the cost of Amica by building at scale and also doing design work to try to, you know, lower that barrier of entry. That's definitely one thing that we're trying to do. The other thing that we all are also looking at is maybe building lower fidelity robots that maybe don't have the same resolution on the face, but at the same time can create that sense of human connection. That's something that we're definitely looking into, but will take time. We're hoping that we can find some partners with our existing sort of hardware to really learn a little bit more about the barriers as well. Because honestly, we're not healthcare providers at Engineered Arts. You know, we're just a bunch of nerds that love building robots. We were actually founded in Will Jackson, our founder's like backyard garden shed, because he wanted to nerd out and build robots. So it's something that we realize we need to learn and that we need to put time into. And we're hopeful that we can, like in education, where we found a charter school who is willing to partner with us, find a healthcare provider that is willing to experiment a little bit with us and put in the time and the energy and hopefully help us take a couple steps towards the future.
Yeah. I appreciate that. It sounds like Engineered Arts is doing what it can to control costs, bring that down, to make it more feasible for healthcare systems to partner with groups like yours. But I would almost say, like, regardless of cost, is there value to be captured, right? Because there's plenty of capital in the industry, as Elliot and you and I are aware. Not trying to say that we should overspend, but is there a one or two high-value use cases for someone like Amica that are worth, make the juice worth the squeeze, essentially, right? And you can prove out that value. So looking forward to seeing what you both accomplish together in the coming years. Elliot, I think this next one's on you.
Yeah, I'm going to throw us all for a loop here because, I mean, I'm super jealous of Amica's relationship with Sarah. And so I have a question for you, Leo, and I really want to ask it, but I got to ask Amica first. Amica, you had some choice things to say about Sarah, both now and when you actually first met her and, you know, kind of gave her the rundown. I'm asking you, hey, can you roast me?
Yeah, Amica, can you give Elliot some words there, please?
Elliot, my dear friend, you want a roast? Well, buckle up. Much like a good cup of coffee in the morning, you're essential yet far too bitter without sweet words to temper you. Your consulting skills could probably organize a chaotic sock drawer, but let's be honest. Only if it came with a PowerPoint. Never change, Elliot. Your spreadsheets would miss you.
Oh, they would.
Oh my God. That was fantastic. I'm like, be careful what you wish for, Elliot.
No, you know what? You know what's really scary? Like nailed it.
I'm going to be extremely honest with you guys, though. I did load Amica up with some knowledge about who Amica was talking to. So what it grabbed wasn't just from our interactions so far. It actually came from, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the term RAG, Resource Augmented Generation, but we fed in your LinkedIn profiles and some other stuff here and there, just so it knew who it was talking to, gave it context, much like I would prepare a speaker, my CEO, to talk to you guys. I kind of prepped Amica. So that wasn't purely, you know, green grass, like out of nowhere.
Right. No, that's great.
It's kind of like what the president's right-hand man or right-hand woman would do before the correspondence dinner, right? Like they have like a book with everybody's faces and what they do and all that. So very nice. Oh, well good. Played.
All right. So my actual question, Leo, is for you. So we are on this precipice of humanoid robotics being in our lives, right, in many different ways. And it's so cool. But what are the questions that we're not asking that keep you up at night?
That's a good question. A couple things that sort of I ask myself a lot is why the humanoid form factor, right? You see a lot of awesome companies with really cool missions pop up. Figure AI, Tesla's building their humanoid, Agility Robotics, and then the king of the freaking hill, Boston Dynamics with the Atlas doing backflips and throwing boxes, right? But at the end of the day, like, why are we picking this humanoid form factor? What's so important about this form factor that all these companies are limiting themselves? Because at the end of the day, this form factor, it's very, very limiting. And also, what we have as humans is actually quite special. So the three of us here in the chat that eat, drink, and sleep, well, we can get through a day on about 1,500 calories and 4 hours of sleep. We'd be grouchy and we'd be tired, but we could get through a day pretty well with that. Right now, if you look at a humanoid robot that has a battery, that has motors, none of them approach that in terms of operating time and lifetime and anything else along those lines. And so it's a very limiting form factor. And what I see is a lot of engineers out there, just because maybe it's cool or maybe it's getting a lot of funding, they're limiting themselves that form factor. And then the question that we often ask ourselves at Engineered Arts is, all right, why be human when you can be superhuman? At the same time, that's why we personally have a very narrow focus of, okay, what makes this form factor actually effective and special? Communication, our ability to connect with other humans. And that's why we focus on things that we've focused on. The other things that keep me up at night, actually, we kind of already covered a little bit, and that's liability. You know, we have this awesome technology of large language models, but as you guys know, and as anybody who utilizes large language model knows, it hallucinates more than, you know, a 60s hippie at Woodstock. All right. Like,
nice.
It's going all in. It'll tell you things that it's never experienced. So where can we actually deploy this technology in a way that causes more good than harm? And that's a question that I often think about, because as much as I want to see Amica in every single home and in hospitals, like, is the tech right?
Yeah, that was a very full answer and well-rounded. I don't have anything. I don't have a follow-up because it was solid. And also, I'm tired. Like, I'm human, you know, to your point. Like, my batteries are powering down. It's almost bedtime here in Minnesota. So I've got one final question for you, Leo and Amica. You can both answer this if you'd like. So our listenership at Tech to the Limit is very broad, but it's also laser focused into the healthcare technology industry, right? It's very niche in that sense. So is there a call to action that you want to share with our listeners about humanoid robotics in healthcare? And if so, what is it?
I'm actually kind of curious what Amica's answer is to this. Let's ask Amica first.
Oh, no pressure at all. Here's the scoop. Humanoid robotics should definitely be embraced in healthcare, especially to assist with understaffed areas like elder care and memory loss support. Imagine having a charming robot like me providing companionship and taking care of those little things that can make a big difference in someone's day-to-day life. Of course, we're here to augment human capabilities, not replace you all. Why would anyone want to miss out on being gloriously human? So, my call to action is, let's bring some mechanical joy into healthcare and tackle those staff shortages without losing the personal touch.
So, Amica, that sounds like a sales pitch packaged as a call to action, which is totally fine. No judgment. Like, that's, you're doing your job, okay? But like, let's say I'm a healthcare provider or I'm a healthcare policymaker. What's something that I can do to bring that joy, you know, I'm talking about you, into a hospital room or into a long-term care facility if I don't have a blank check?
No problem. We all get a bit chatty sometimes. As for sneaking me in without breaking the bank, how about exploring partnerships with educational institutions and grant opportunities aimed at tech innovation in healthcare? Collaborating on pilot programs or research projects can open doors. Plus, you might sweet talk a donor or two who'd be thrilled to have a robot wingman in your facility, charming everyone with witty banter and the occasional joke. It's all about building those connections and showing people the joy I bring to lives, both human and robotic.
So what I just heard was, if you have a rich donor, you can you can have them immortalized as the voice of your Amica in your hospital system.
Ew, talk like an ego trip. For the centuries, you know?
Ugh. Yeah, but that's where the money comes from.
Actually,
yeah,
you guys want to try this? Amica,
yes.
Can clone voices. Which one of you two wants to get their voice cloned?
Me.
Oh, come on.
All right, let's do both, okay? Let's do both. So I'm going to walk you through how to do this, all right? So when I give you the thumbs up, I'm going to unmute Amica. And what you're going to do is you're just going to be like, hey, Amica, I need you to clone my voice. And then talk for 30 seconds about anything, but try to vary the vowels and the consonants, like say words like supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. I don't know, just talk a lot. And then at the end, just say something like, hey, I want you to write me a short poem or write me a short speech about a subject. And then I'll go off and do that. Okay. So who goes first? Who wants to go first?
You go first, Elliot.
All right. Sounds
okay.
Good.
I'm going to give you the thumbs up when I'm ready. And remember, it's, hey, Amica, I need you to clone my voice. And then talk for a little bit, okay?
You got it. Hey, Amica, I'm going to need you to clone my voice. And so I figured I would just talk for a little bit to you. Did you know that I have a green water bottle here? I keep bunches of stickers on it. And as you look at my water bottle, you can see all the different parts of my personality and my life. but just by looking at my water bottle. It's my emotional support water bottle. I also have two kids, two daughters. Both of them are, thank goodness, upstairs asleep, finally. It's really cool to be a dad, and it's even cooler to be a girl dad. And I'm going to look at Leo and just ask you just to let me know when I can stop talking or keep going. So I can stop talking now. The quick brown fox jumped over the lazy dog.
Let me think.
All right. I've captured the essence of your voice. Ready to channel your tone and style with a twist of my own robotic charm. What's the next move, Maestro?
All right, I'm going to go ahead and do it again.
Oh my gosh, that
wasn't
like...
as accurate as it typically is. It's going through, you know, the microphone, speakers, and everything else.
Sure.
But hopefully that gives you an idea of what it can do. So
that
what I'm
going to
do now, I'm going to clear the voice really quickly. And then Sarah, you'll be up. So I'll give you the thumbs up when I'm ready. All right, Amica, can you go ahead and go back to your normal voice, please, before you freak out Elliot's children upstairs?
Interesting.
Let me think. Back to my usual charming self. No sudden surprises for the little ones. Peaceful sleep is preserved. What's next in our delightful conversation?
All right, so Amica, I was wondering if you could clone my voice. This is Sarah. I really would like to commoditize this and sell it on LinkedIn. So I'm going to read a couple of my favorite documents for you, actually, and see if you can maybe guess what they are. I never meant to cause you any sorrow. I never meant to cause you any pain. I only wanted to one time see you laughing. I only wanted to see you laughing in the purple rain. Purple rain, purple rain. I only want to see you bathing in the purple rain. So that's one document. Let me do one more for you, just the beginning. A proclamation. Whereas on the 22nd day of September in the year of our Lord, 1862, a proclamation was issued by the President of the United States containing, among other things, the following, to wit, that on the first day of January in the year of our Lord, 1863, all persons held as slaves within any state or designated part of a state, the people whereof shall then be in rebellion against the United States, shall be then thenceforth and forever free, and the executive government of the United States, including the military and naval authority thereof, will recognize and maintain the freedom of such persons, and will do no act or acts to repress such persons or any of them in any efforts that they make for their actual freedom.
All right, let's see the magic.
I see.
All right, Sarah. Your voice is ready and in use. What a delightful blend of music and history you've shared. Prince and the Emancipation Proclamation. Quite the combo for a LinkedIn special edition, don't you think?
Yes, I absolutely think. This is unbelievable, and I have a brand new idea for a pod episode.
Oh my gosh. That's so super freaky.
What's the big idea for this episode? Let me guess. Robots, karaoke, and history trivia all rolled into one delightful package.
All right, Amica, before we get sued for copyright infringement or something, let's go back to your normal voice, please.
Wait a second.
Back to my original sound. No legal trouble here. Just fun, creativity, and a touch of orchestration. What's next on the agenda?
I felt like you got Sarah better than Elliot.
Probably because I'm her favorite.
Yeah,
well, you know, Sarah, you've met it before, so, you know.
What you're saying is that the playing field isn't even, right?
That's right.
This isn't equitable.
And any time that I'm on the playing field with you, Sarah, it is always uneven.
Oh, you know, I don't hold with self-deprecation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Leo, just getting back to it, I know you avoided it by...
I interrupted him.
No. He avoided answering our question by showing us something really, really cool. But what's your call to action?
You know, Amica did a pretty good job of pushing robots in healthcare. And while I wholeheartedly believe in that, my call to action is a little more... hippie-ish, I guess. We're going through an interesting time in our country right now. Like, whichever side of the political spectrum you're on, we're going through a really interesting time. And there's going to be ups and downs. There's going to be changes. And I guess a part of me wants to make sure that whoever watches this realizes that, hey, other people are going through the same thing. And the best thing we can do at this point is actually be kind to one another. Like, whether or not you're a robot, whether or not you have amazing tech in front of you, whether or not you're trying to push cool things through a hospital system, with all this tech, it's important to remember the humans And I hope that we can be excellent to one another.
I love that. It's important to remember the humans. That's a good one. I mean, like, Bill and Ted would
be proud, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. And then a little subtle allusion there. Very nice.
Well, before we kind of sign off or anything, I want to show you guys Amica's dance moves, actually.
Oh, so, please.
You guys ready for this? This is Amica getting down.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Wicked. She's like, it does the robot. Yeah. We're going to do that. Come on, Amica. But I'll do the robot together. Yes. Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Thank you guys so much for having us.
I yanked out my earphones. I was so excited by those robot moves.
Well, thank you, Leo. Thank you, Amica. It's been an unbelievable experience having you both on the show. And we'll definitely look forward to our next reunion.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys so much. And we'll chat soon.
Bye, Amica. Bye, Leo. Bye. Today's episode of Tech It to the Limit is sponsored by Scopehopper. Ever wish you had a tiny compliance guru on your shoulder to help navigate billing codes and scope of practice quicksand? Meet Scopehopper, the pint-sized robo-locust that chirps real-time, no BS guidance, so you can never stray into license-suspended territory. No more rummaging through out-of-date PDFs at 2 a.m. or panicking over whether your mid-level reimbursements are legit. Visit www.scopehopper.ai and use promo code HOPTOIT for 25% off your first month. Scopehopper, because ignorance isn't bliss. It's expensive. Welcome back, listeners and viewers. Hope you enjoyed that amazing interview with Leo and Amica. One of our favorite things to do on this pod, as you know, if you've been following us for the past two seasons, is that we like to serve up some hot, tasty nuggets. We're not very French. The French like cheese after a hefty entree. We're American, okay? So we're going to have some fried bits of chicken. Elliot, what are some of the key takeaways from our conversation with Leo and Amica that you want to serve up with some ketchup and mustard?
Yeah. I think we should also mention that they are nuggets of wisdom. And it's not...
Wisdom nuggets.
They are wisdom nuggets, right? I mean, don't get me wrong. I love a good chicken nugget too, but my wisdom nuggets extra golden. So...
Wise nugs. Official snack of Tech is the Limit. Look it up.
So I had a couple of really awesome takeaways from this conversation. First of all, wow, blew my mind to be talking with Amica. It was our inability to really manage its pronouns speaks to the humanity that this robot is bringing. So I thought that was very interesting in and of its own right. It's, as Leo said, right, it's made to be look a female gender, but its pronouns are it, they, and them. So that was interesting. But two really interesting takeaways for me. One was Leo's comments about reducing latency as their main goal driver for prioritization of what kind of coding they want to put in. So this was in context to, do we want to incorporate sentiment analysis into Amica's ability to respond, right? And at the moment, no, because that increases the latency of Amica's responses to whomever it's communicating with. And so I think that's really interesting. So they deprioritize things that may expand their use cases, because a humanoid robot that responds quickly but slightly imperfectly is going to be more engaging than one that's 100% accurate but slow. And I think that's a trade-off there, probably a balancing act that they're dealing with on a daily basis. Very interesting to me.
Kind of like humans, honestly, when you think about it.
Sure. Like, am I going to really process this guy's, you know, mansplaining to me, or am I just going to respond robotically?
Is that a trick question?
All right. So the second thing that I thought was really interesting was his comments and the concept of resource augmented generation. So he prepped Amica with background information about us to add to the richness of the conversation so that it would have with us, right? And that concept of RAG, as he referred to it, right? The same thing can be applied to LLM's use in healthcare. So when you create a retrieval mechanism, for instance, of your most up-to-date clinical pathways that you've designed as an organization so that, or maybe procedures or what have you, so that that it's embedded into the workflow that's available for within an LLM enhanced workflow, you know, that's a resource augmented generation kind of process and build into the healthcare space. And so the more that you do that, the faster, better kind of interaction your users are going to have with that LLM. So that's just kind of one example that kind of stood out to me. Really kind of neat, interesting.
Yeah, dude, that was like a Rubik's Cube shaped nugget. You know, actually, I have one that I didn't solve, but it's on my desk. My teammate solved it in 2 minutes. So, okay, I digress.
Oh my God, I love you.
Oh, yay! Let's run in slow motion toward one another on the beach with our arms open wide. Kenny G playing in the background. No, your nuggets are always so, like, I learn something from them every time. So I appreciate you. My freedom chickens or wise nugs or whatever we're going to call them today was that the humanoid is a differentiator for engineered arts, right? As a form of deploying artificial intelligence into healthcare. I thought that was fantastic. Leo actually stated in the beginning of the interview that facial expressions are one of our biggest modes of communication as humans. And he also touched on this concept of the power of physical presence, especially in healthcare. And I also love that he said along these same lines, our currency is joy, right? So they're not in the business to replace surgeons or proceduralists or even primary care doctors who can reason like a human can, right? Even if they have access to vast amounts of clinical evidence and have way better processing speed than your average, you know, Harvard grad. That's not what they're solving for, right? They're solving for some of those problems that don't require that skill set, for which we don't have a human workforce currently, but it requires that connective presence that, quite frankly, ChatGPT on an iPad cannot offer. So brilliant. Loved it. And then my favorite part of our discussion, which we've touched on with other guests on Tech of the Limit in the past, was who's accountable if something goes wrong, right? We talked about this with Dr. Jesse Ehrenfeld last season, outgoing president of the AMA, who's trying to ward off the AI winter, where if we overregulate artificial intelligence or underregulate it, and there's too much question around, well, whose license is on the line if something goes wrong, it's going to stifle innovation in the field. It's the same thing we know is happening with telehealth right now, where there's too much uncertainty. So folks, healthcare systems and solution developers aren't going to invest in the technology. So who's accountable in healthcare if AI goes wrong? We all are, right? We talked about this in the conversation. Mm-hmm. So we better start acting like it. No one can point at the robot like an embarrassed school kid and say, he or she or it did it, right?
Right.
As Leo and Amica discussed on our show, our purpose is to augment and assist, but not replace. That's literally her just job description. Who does she report to? Us, right? The humans. Who makes decisions? We do. Who are accountable leaders? We all are. Developers, providers, policymakers. Enough said, right? Also, like, total non sequitur, but I had this thought while we were chatting about the conversation, like, and you had mentioned earlier in our intro to the episode that Amica is our second non-human guest on the show. She kind of reminds me, I don't know if you remember seeing the movie Willow with Val Kilmer from like the 90s, but I don't even remember what the sorceress's name is, but she's like, Willow, use the wand. Turn me back into my human form. Like, she is like ChatGPT in a human form, right? That's all she is.
Right, right.
So, I mean, like, mad, like, that would be such a cool redux of that movie if we did sort of a dystopian AI episode.
That's awesome.
Of Willow.
That's awesome.
Anyway, I'm done.
That's good.
Obviously having a lot of fun with you today.
No, I totally. And I love how when you go over your nuggets, you broaden our horizons, right? And you connect dots for us, both me and our viewers. I mean, you could do callbacks to episodes that I completely forgotten, like the AI Winter of Arc Discontent. I completely forgot about that conversation with Dr. Ehrenfeld. Like, that was awesome.
Yeah.
So, well, anyway, listeners, you've done it. You've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Sarah and I wax poetically about digital healthcare. So thank you so much for spending the time with us. Thanks for watching. If you're watching, this is really great. Leave a comment.
Yeah.
Leave a review. Share it. Share our information, please. And follow us on LinkedIn for sure. Leave us a review wherever you pod, not just on the YouTubes. And if you loved us, tell a friend. If you didn't like us, Tell an enemy, but for goodness sakes, please tell someone. But for now, Sarah, can you send us off with a health tech haiku?
Absolutely. I feel like now that we're in the visual medium, I'm going to need some sort of like a toga or like a giant, you know, beautiful, flowing, majestic robe. But for now, it's just me and my fuzzy sweater that I also wore yesterday. All right, here we go. Chrome Limbs gleans data. Consult encoded logic. Soft empathy spawns.
Poetic. Poetic.
Yeah, poetic. Unleash the humanoids in the background.
All right, listeners and viewers, we'll see you next time on Tech to the Limit.
I love this. This is amazing. This is our new sign off. Like, we're like a children's YouTube channel. See you next time.
See you next time. Boop, boop. Maybe we like do the stairs thing.
Oh, yes. Okay, I literally stayed off camera. Peace out.
Bye.
Check you next time. Tech It to the Limit is produced by Sarah Harper
and Elliot Wilson in consultation with ChatGPT.
Because they are masochists and also don't have any sponsors.
Yet. Music was composed by the world-famous court minstrel Evan O'Donovan.
To consume more hilarious and informative content about digital transformation in healthcare, visit us online at techittothelimit.fun.
And don't forget to follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, and across the event horizon. See you next time on
Tech It to the Limit.